Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Today we take a moment to look at the foundation of the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA. It's a law that has helped Native nations for 27 years bring back the remains and cultural property of their ancestors. We'll also peer into what's ahead for those that call upon this law. Is NAGPRA the reason your tribe has been able to welcome home those that were kept in museum collections? We look forward to hearing your take today, right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Food sovereignty movements are taking place across Indian country as Native people look to return to fresh, healthy foods, including traditional meals. Improving the health and wellness of the Oglala Lakota people is among efforts by the Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation in bringing long-lasting change to the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. In our State of Change series, Jim Kent visits the group's food sovereignty program to learn what's being done to help Lakota people start their own gardens and more.
I'm standing in a small building at the Thunder Valley property on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Just beside me, and actually all around me, are chickens. Lots of chickens. 560 chickens, to be exact.
So the birds we have here are Rhode Island Reds, and the reason why we chose that bird is because they could withstand our winters here in South Dakota, and they're a really good dual-purpose bird, meaning excellent egg layers, and a really good me bird after that.
Ernest Weston is program assistant for Thunder Valley's Food Sovereignty Initiative. Its goal is to re-identify, recreate, and rebuild the local food system by increasing access to hands-on education.
We have this 2-acre demonstration farm that includes a poultry-based regenerative ag practice and a greenhouse and a community garden, which is, all of them are classrooms.
Each class of 25 students learns about traditional row cropping, transplanting, and every other aspect of gardening, even what happens when Mother Nature calls.
How's the community garden going?
It went extremely well until the hail decided that no more.
But even a hailstorm can be educational in learning about the realities of growing your own food and how important the weather is as a part of the equation. And from using a hay bale as your garden or a small plot of land to just making better choices about what you eat, Weston says tribal members are taking what they've learned at Thunder Valley into their own homes and communities. The strongest interest in Thunder Valley's Food Sovereignty Initiative is being shown by teens who'd like to learn how to feed themselves and elders who'd like to reconnect with the old ways. There was obviously a disconnect along the way for his tribe, says Weston, but the path ahead shows promise for reawakening the Lakota culture's tradition of self-sufficiency while exploring regenerative agricultural practices centered on the benefits of the humble chicken and its manure. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The National Indian Gaming Commission has approved a Nebraska Tribes casino plan for a project near Omaha, the Associated Press reports. The Ponca Tribes project has been in court for a decade, and the casino remains uncertain. Tribal leaders say the gaming venue would help boost the economy and aid in moving the tribe forward. Plans for the project include slots, tables, and a hotel. The Winnebago Tribal Council has voted to assume operations of the Indian Health Service Winnebago Hospital in Nebraska. The council voted last week to initiate the self-governance process under federal law. The tribe plans to request the Indian Health Service enter into negotiations so the tribe can operate the hospital. Chairman Frank White, in a press release, stated the tribe has been working toward this day for more than 2 years. He adds the tribe can improve quality and access of care at the hospital and stabilize the management of the healthcare system. The move comes after the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services terminated the hospital's contract in 2015. The tribe would like to take over operations of the hospital by July 2018. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, promoting obesity prevention, improved nutrition, and physical activity. More at hanc.aaip.org. Support by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs to help you save money and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you. More at aarp.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. On this day in 1990, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA, was enacted. For the past 27 years, tribes have called on this law to bring home the remains and cultural items that were housed in federal agencies and museum collections that receive federal funding. There are more layers to this law, and we'll hear more about it on today's program. As we visit with our guests, we also want to hear your NAGPRA stories. What's your tribe's history with this law? Is it the reason ancestors from your tribe returned home? And if you work in the arena of NAGPRA, what would you like to say about the strength and limits of this law? We look forward to adding your voice to the discussion. Either call in to 1-800-996-2848 or send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today from Rockville, Maryland, is Shannon Keller O'Loughlin, and she is the Executive Director of the Association on American Indian Affairs. She's joining us from her office, and Shannon is from the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. Welcome to Native America Calling, Shannon.
Thank you, Tara, for having me here.
And Shannon, it's our pleasure to have you here with us. And 27 years, that is quite some time. Also here with us on the line, joining us today from Paris, France, is Melanie O'Brien. She is with the U.S. Department of the Interior National Park Service and is the manager of the National NAGPRA program. It's our pleasure to also welcome her into the hour. Melanie, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And ladies, let's get right into it. NAGPRA is 27 years old. That's a lot of history, and I'm sure a lot of stories that could be shared. Melanie, let's go ahead and just start with understanding more the purpose of NAGPRA. What would you like to say about that?
Well, the law establishes a process through which museums and federal agencies must make information available to tribes about their collections, including human remains and cultural items, and provides a path for tribes to make claims to request the return of those items. I'd like to add that the law also establishes a grant program to facilitate the consultation and repatriation of items under the law.
And so, Shannon, is there anything you'd like to expand on?
What I always say about what NAGPRA is that it's a law. What I've found in working with NAGPRA and working with tribes in obtaining repatriation of ancestors and cultural items is that many museums and other institutions treat this law as if it's a reason to do more research, to do more study, and to create more burdens for tribes rather than just to fulfill the purpose of NAGPRA, which it says right in the regulations is to repatriate.
And so I'm hearing different views on this and why it exists. And I think the story really opens up when tribes who have called on this to return remains starts to happen. And I'm also curious, Melanie, if you can tell us any idea how many repatriations have occurred in the 27 years of NAGPRA?
Well, we keep some statistics that shed light on the activity under NAGPRA, again, related to the process that's established. The last step in the process is the publication of a notice in the Federal Register, which is like a daily newspaper of the federal government. We know from those notices that just about 60,000 sets of individual human remains have been returned to tribes under NAGPRA.
And so when we think of the numbers, would you call that a success?
Well, I would call every repatriation a success because it means there's been effective communication between a museum and a tribe and resulted in an agreement. However, we do know that under NAGPRA, there are over 120,000 human remains that still remain unresolved, unavailable to tribes through the NAGPRA process.
And is there any reason for that?
Well, the majority of those are classified under the law as culturally unidentifiable, meaning that a museum or federal agency has not been able to establish a cultural affiliation between the human remains and a present-day Indian tribe or Native Hawaiian organization. It's a large amount of the NAGPRA inventories, we call them, the list of these ancestors in museums and federal agencies that are in this category of culturally unidentifiable. That doesn't mean there's not a way forward for them. Since 2010, there's been a process under the regulations by which tribes can make claims for these culturally unidentifiable human remains. The progress on that has been slow, but I will say that this year we've seen a significant increase in the number of human remains that were identified as culturally unidentifiable, completing the process and being available to return to tribes.
And with that, Melanie, who made the decision that these items were culturally unidentifiable?
So in the first instance, the responsibility of identifying cultural affiliation falls to the museum or federal agency. However, that decision must be made in consultation with tribes.
And is there a way to keep track of this or making sure that those consultations are happening?
Well, we require that consultation evidence be included in an inventory from a museum or federal agency. So when the initial lists are submitted, we require that there be information about consultation activities.
All right. Thank you for that, Melanie. And understand that this is something that gets controversial. And we've heard from folks before about NAGPRA and the limits of it. Also celebrations, and we'll get to that too. But if there's something you'd like to share, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Shannon, when it comes to culturally unidentifiable, what is your thought?
I have a few. One is that currently the process that Melanie described about requesting that the NAGPRA Review Committee provide a disposition of culturally unidentifiable human remains to a particular tribe. That process is not available currently because the Secretary Zinke within the Department of Affairs has suspended all activity for any federal advisory committee, including the NAGPRA Review Committee. So unfortunately, the NAGPRA Review Committee has missed, I believe, two meetings in which it would be providing this type of disposition of unidentifiable human remains. Is that, I believe that's correct, and Melanie can chime in if I'm incorrect. The other issue with culturally unidentifiable human remains is consultation. And that 120,000 currently ancestors that are currently labeled as unidentifiable, many of those were put on these what are termed CUI lists, the acronym for culturally unidentifiable. They were put on those CUI lists in a very hurried fashion as NAGPRA time limits were coming up. And many museums have reported that they were unable to have time to consult. So any human remains they were unable to consult about, they just immediately put on the CUI list without consultation. And that's in opposition to what the law requires museums or institutions to do. So we know that there are many, on the NAGPRA website, there's a list of museums and federal institutions that have provided no evidence of consultation. And currently, even though I know the number has gone down since 2014, there's currently, what we know so far, it looks like around 30,000 unidentified human remains in museums that have not been consulted about. And in federal agencies, there's 13,000 ancestors that have not yet had consultation with tribes. So I think consultation is a huge problem, and it also takes a lot of resources for a museum or federal institution to consult with appropriate tribes. I can keep talking, Kara, if you want me to. I don't want to cut into all your time.
I know there's a lot to say about all of this, and let's pause real quick. And Melanie, is there anything you want to pick up on?
Just that I agree with Shannon. I think consultation is a critical issue under NAGPRA and one that is constantly and consistently in need of attention.
And Melanie, is it right that there is a freeze on some of this work with the new administration?
Yes, that's correct. Since May of this year, the Department of the Interior has postponed all meetings of federal advisory committees while they conduct a review of over 200 committees that are currently run by the Department of the Interior. The NAGPRA Review Committee is just one of those. But I do hope that we will soon be back up and running and holding our meeting.
All right. Thank you for that. And folks, if you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Maybe you work in the arena of the NAGPRA issues. Have repatriations been put on hold? Anything you want to share, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Melanie, at the beginning, we gave a quick overview of NAGPRA, what it does. What more beyond the brief description we gave? Would you like to say that NAGPRA does?
Well, I think first and foremost, NAGPRA facilitates the return of these very important ancestors and items to tribes. But in addition, NAGPRA establishes some wonderful relationships and growing connections between museums and Indian nations.
Okay. And, you know, if we're going to take a look at 27 years, I'm sure there have been a lot of moments, histories, and stories, and we're hoping you'll share some of them with us today as our phone lines are open. We're live. We're at 1-800-996-2848. And Shannon, in the years of its existence, what would you like to share about NAGPRA over the past 27 years? And I know that's a very big chunk, but anything you want to share, go ahead.
Sure. I believe that tribes and others who worked to develop this wonderful piece of human rights legislation that was specifically developed to as part of the special government-to-government relationship between the U.S. federal government and tribes. I believe tribes and Indian people got involved in this legislation thinking that this process would be simple and that museums and federal agencies would be willing parties. Unfortunately, it has been very difficult working with some institutions over the last 27 years. And I have worked with Indian nations who had been seeking repatriation of their ancestors and sacred items and cultural patrimony even prior to the enactment of NAGPRA, who after 20 years of NAGPRA had still not been able to obtain ancestors and cultural items. As an attorney, getting involved in those types of issues is extremely disheartening, and you wonder what's really going on here. And what I found as a legal practitioner looking into those types of issues is that there were absolutely unwilling museums, and they did everything in their power to cause issues, cause delay, and burden tribes from repatriation. And these are institutions that that we look up to. They're the larger institutions who have very large and complex histories with American Indians in the particular region. So I still say there is a lot more work that we need to do with NAGPRA and domestic repatriation. And looking to the future beyond domestic repatriation, the Association on American Indian Affairs is also involved in international repatriation issues. And you may have heard of STOP Act legislation that was recently proposed to protect or limit the exportation of cultural items from being exported to foreign countries as well. So this remains an important and vital issue in Native American communities and as part of our cultural sovereignty.
And Shannon, we're definitely going to get more into the STOP Act and even get an ear on some of the hearing that took place surrounding this after the break. But Shannon, I did want to pick up on something you shared about museums not, as you're saying, coming forward and putting in roadblocks to this. What are some of those roadblocks or details on what just happens?
It's hard to look at these issues sometimes with objectivity. So I will say something that some may find humor with and others may find disdain. But there are many old non-Indians involved in museums and institutions that are in charge and curating our ancestors and our items. And because of the generation that they grew up in and where the science of archaeology has been in the past, those old non-Indian people are still in that place. And so for whatever reason, they still look at Indian people as objects of science and objects to study, and that it is their job to protect and curate our items so that they'll be protected forever instead of allowing them to come back so that we can continue ourselves as a culture and peoples to continue our next generations with our cultural items and our sacred rights.
And Shannon, you, in an article, when it was the 20-year anniversary, brought forward a statement, don't take things that don't belong to you, apologize, and don't do it again. You have that as a basic philosophy in understanding how to deal with some of these items, and as well as remains. And your thoughts further on that, about all of this and how that theory kind of is at the baseline.
Yes, I really think NAGPRA can be a simple process that tribes and museums and federal institutions can partake in to facilitate repatriation. But the idea of giving back what's not yours, that simple rule and value that we learned in kindergarten, taking that kind of moral and putting it into our repatriation practice, I think goes a long way. And I think the process that was set forward in the legislation allows us to do that.
All right. Thank you for that, Shannon. And Melanie, of course, if there's anything you want to pick up on that Shannon shared, please do. Go ahead, Melanie.
Sure, certainly. Yeah, I think I absolutely agree with Shannon. I think that NAGPRA is about establishing, what is mine and what's yours and resolving rights to owning those items. That is, in essence, what the law does. It provides a path for Native Americans to claim and get the return of objects that are theirs and, of course, ancestors. I think it's a challenge. As Shannon pointed out, there's a different concept of protection and what protection means and what preservation means. And I think overall, over the last 27 years, there's been an increasing understanding among certainly the museum and scientific communities about their role in preserving and protecting cultures that are not the dominant culture. And I think there's been a real change, a real sea change over the last 27 years. It doesn't mean it's complete, and I would say that the change is ongoing.
All right. Thank you for that. That's a great place to leave people thinking as we get ready for our second half here. And folks, if you'd like to join us, we'd love to have you. All you got to do is give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. NAGPRA has been around for 27 years, and we want to know, how has it affected your tribal nation? Is it the reason some of your ancestors came home? If you want to tell that side of it, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And as we take a look at where the law stands now, maybe you want to look ahead. More things you see that this law could be used for, maybe a strengthening of it. You can also give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to weaving your voice into the conversation today. And you can also make comments directly on our website. You can also send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE, and we look forward to what you want to say about NAGPRA, 27 years of it. Again, phone lines are open. We'll keep them open as we tell you a little bit about what is coming up tomorrow on our electronic talking circle. Officials say wild horses on some tribal lands are out of control. They compete with livestock and wildlife for resources. It's costly to manage the populations, and slaughtering them is a controversial option. Tribes have limited funds available to deal with this problem. Join us as we talk about wild horses on the next Native America Calling. Hey, 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 hey
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, Healthy Active Native Communities. HANK works with communities to implement effective strategies that promote obesity prevention, improve nutrition, and physical activity based on each community's individuality. Information on promising practices, nutrition and fitness programs, and shared successes at hanc.aaip.org. Support for Kowanic Broadcast Corporation comes from Montana State University in Bozeman, where the Native American Studies Department offers graduate courses in areas such as American Indian literature, policy, and contemporary issues. Information about the on-campus master's program, as well as the online graduate certificate for distance learners, can be found at montana.edu/Native American.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. And the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA, is 27 years old today. So far, we've heard about its origins and its connection to tribes. What more can be said about this law and its connection to your tribal nation? Join the conversation at 1-800-996-2848. And you can also leave your comments on our Facebook website or on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And before NAGPRA, museums had no mandate to return the remains of Native ancestors or their cultural items. What else has this law changed when it comes to the relationship between tribes and museums who have housed the remains of Native ancestors? And on the community level, has the return of one of your ancestors or certain cultural items created a bridge for healing or more understanding of your Native culture? We're ready for your calls, too. We're ready at 1-800-996-2848. With us today on the line from Paris, France, is Melanie O'Brien, and she is the U.S. Department of the Interior National Park Service. She's with them, and she's the manager of the National NAGPRA program. Also with us is Shannon Keller O'Loughlin, and she is the Executive Director of the Association on American Indian Affairs. She comes to us from the Choctaw Nation. Ladies, it's my pleasure to pick the conversation back up, and we're going to go ahead and go to the phone lines now to hear from Ron in Lapway, Idaho, tuned in on KIYE. Ron, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Yeah. Back in 69, my dad worked for Bureau of Indian Affairs, and we lived in Fort Duchesne, Utah, on the UNO Ray Reservation. And during their summer program, the community summer program, we went to summer camp. And then their Indian program, we went to summer camp. And both places took us from Fort Duchesne to Vernal, Utah, to a little second-hand antique shop. And inside that antique shop was this old woman, Indian woman, they found up in a cave up in the mountains. And her body was decaying, and you could see part of her teeth, you know, because her mouth had decayed. And she was wrapped in a cedar bark blanket. And I complained to their council down there. And then my dad retired, and we moved home back to Idaho. And years later, after this was enacted, I was happy to find out that that one was buried, because that was somebody's grandmother. So
and
I'm
you know,
happy this law was enacted.
All right, Ron, thank you for that. And what we've heard from tribal folks sometimes, that's the most important thing, that people are understanding that these remains, well, they're people and they have a people. Ron, thank you for your call there in Lapway, Idaho. Again, if you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And I want to give folks an update. Earlier we mentioned the STOP Act. Last Wednesday, the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs had a legislative hearing to receive testimony on the Indian Health Service and S-1400, which is known as the Safeguarding Tribal Objects of Patrimony Act of 2017, a.k.a. the STOP Act. During the hearing, Acting Assistant Secretary for the U.S. Department of the Interior's Indian Affairs, John Tasuda of the Kiowa Nation, gave testimony. He reported the Government Accountability Office is currently in the process of completing a study on this matter under the 2016 request by the House Judiciary Committee. It also includes an assessment of policies and practices conducted on behalf of the department, as well as the Department of State and the Department of Justice. Tasuda also stated that it would be premature for the department to provide a position on issues at hand before the GAO report is released in full. Later in the session, Pueblo of Acoma Governor Kurt Riley was asked about the urgency of passing this. We'll hear his response, followed by the interaction between New Mexico U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich and Acting Assistant Secretary Tasuda.
These cultural items are continuing to leave and go across the seas to be sold. So there is a sense of urgency. Should we wait for the GAO report? In my opinion, actions can be taken now without the GAO report. However, I think once the GAO report comes out, it will only confirm what we as Native tribes, Pueblos, and nations in this country know, that it is happening and it's still happening today.
Mr. Tasuda, I find it deeply troubling to learn that almost 10 months into a new administration, that the Department of Interior itself has not looked into what policy changes are necessary to stop the trafficking of sacred tribal objects. In your testimony, you say that the department is waiting to hear from the GAO before forming a policy on this subject. But surely your staff already has the information necessary to develop a position on this issue. In fact, the Department of Interior was engaged in an extensive tribal consultation process just last year to hear from tribes on this issue. So I, too, look forward to hearing the GAO's analysis, and I hope we can learn from it. I hope it recommends additional solutions. But I also hope that the department is not abdicating its responsibilities to tribes by declining to develop its own plans to solve this problem, given what we know. Can you share with us any changes that the department has made or intends to make to help stop the export of these objects, or any policy ideas or recommendations that you would like to make on this topic?
I think the department, so under current authorities, the department has been involved in efforts in the past, and I think the governor alluded to that. And we obviously will try to do what we can. The importance of this, I agree with the governor, this is hugely important. Tribal history and culture are woven into American history and culture. So it's obviously important and should be important to all of us. But that means that we need to get it right, I think. And so that's the reason that we want to wait for the GAO report. The full responsibility isn't just in our hands. We have the Department of Justice and the State Department that have some a role in this, and we want to make sure that at the end result of it, that we have all the tools in hand that we need to be able to protect our tribal history, culture, objects of cultural heritage, and that we do it the right way so that our actions are defensible and we can proceed with prosecutions and not have any questions on constitutional or other criminal law questions that would rise and hinder our efforts to protect that.
And we're going to turn to our guests for their reactions on this, but if you'd like to make a comment on this, feel free to join the conversation at 1-800-996-2848. And a link to the full hearing can be found on our website. Check with us after the show. Shannon, I want to turn to you. Any thoughts on what you just heard?
Well, I believe Governor Riley is correct. There is nothing that's preventing Congress from going ahead and moving forward. There's nothing preventing Department of Interior from taking a position on this. The Interior did do extensive consultations with tribes in 2016 on this issue, and I think there was an overwhelming amount of support to pass the STOP Act. Where there is any criticism of the STOP Act, it is coming from groups that are interested in protecting the sale of tribal antiquities. And generally, their arguments are couched in the language that they are trying to protect the sale of Native American art. But who they truly are their antiquities dealers. So they're completely immersed in the sale and commercialization of items that have been looted and taken, and that are, you know, 100 years old or more. And they want to be able to export those types of items to foreign auction houses, because the market for these types of items is very great in market countries such as France and Germany and England.
And Shannon, the Stop Act is important in this discussion of NAGPRA, because some would say that this is where NAGPRA falls off, or it wasn't a part of the law in the beginning, of items that are within private collections. And so any thoughts on making NAGPRA stronger, or any other places where you think there's work to be done to make sure that Native items are safeguarded, or ancestors are safeguarded, or that they truly do return? Go ahead, Shannon.
Right. This is why the STOP Act is so easy, because it doesn't create any new laws. It doesn't put restrictions on private ownership, unfortunately. It relies on current laws such as NAGPRA, the Antiquities Act of 1906, as well as the Archaeological Resource and Protection Act. So it's not really forming any new laws. It's just saying all those items that are protected under those laws cannot be exported. So it's a very simple and easy law for the federal government to get behind. As far as where NAGPRA needs to go, absolutely. There is no protection under any current legislative fix for cultural items and ancestors that are found on private lands or held by private hands. And the only limited protection there could possibly be is if you can prove the chain of title and can show that the item or objects were stolen that they were stolen, or that items were taken from federal or tribal land. So it's very limited on how we can get at those private items.
All right, thank you for that. And Melanie, looking ahead, any thoughts about the work ahead?
Sure. I guess I'd like to tie together a few of these threads. The caller mentioned some human remains that were on display prior to the enactment of NAGPRA. And I want to be sure that everybody understands that NAGPRA does have some protections, and there is a criminal provision to NAGPRA that prevents any Native American human remains from being sold, transported for sale, or used for profit. And that would include in a, you know, tourist shop as an attraction that people pay money to see. And there's certainly been successful criminal prosecution of those that use Native American human remains in that way for profit. But Shannon's right. It stops at our borders, and there's nothing that we can do. There's very little that we can do once these things leave the United States and are sold in market abroad. So it's important that we have some mechanism in the international community to help us reclaim these items for tribes.
And at the top of the hour, Melanie, we shared you're in Paris, France. Does your trip have anything to do with that?
Yes, actually it does. So since 2012, the U.S. Embassy in Paris has been actively engaged on behalf of tribal nations in trying to bring awareness to these issues within France and within the auction house community in particular. And so this November, during Native American Heritage Month, the U.S. Embassy arranged for some educational outreach by myself, as well as some other experts in this area, to come and share our process in the United States to give a better understanding of how this works internally, but also to further our connection and communication with both the government here in France, but also with auction houses, and in general, just provide more education and connection and information.
All right. Well, sounds like a very interesting intersection. And if anything comes out of it, you know, shoot us an email. Folks, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And right now, we're going to shift to Mount Pleasant, Michigan, to say hello to William Willie Johnson. He's a curator at the Zibowig Center of Anishinaabe Culture and Lifeways. He is also the NAGPRA designee for the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan, as well as the tribe's interim tribal historic preservation officer. It's our pleasure to bring him into the hour. He comes to us from the Saginaw Chippewa Nation. William, or I understand Willie is better, thank you for joining us.
No, thank you. It's just a pleasure to be able to be a part of this conversation. I'm really enjoying all that's been said. And I just also would like to say briefly that Shannon Martin, Shannon is our director here at the Zibowing Center of Anishinaabe Culture and Lifeways, and she is also a NAGPRA designee on behalf of the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan. So I get a lot of help.
And Willie, there is a lot that's been shared, and the ladies before you gave us a great overview of this law, some of the things to consider, some of the path of the 27 years of NAGPRA. We turn to you to hear what it means to be in the tribal community and to be the entity that is welcoming home ancestors. Tell me a little bit about that and any thoughts of seeing 27 years of this.
Yeah, I have to say that, first of all, that I originally came to the Zibowing Center almost 20 years ago, and I have been involved with the Cultural Resource Management Department and NAGPRA issues since then. And it's an amazing thing for me to be involved with this, because the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan's tribal community puts immense trust into us in regard to NAGPRA, NAGPRA issues, repatriation, reburial of ancestral human remains and associated funerary objects. And so it's an amazingly big responsibility. Our organization, the Zibowing Cultural Society, was actually founded on NAGPRA. So we have the distinct pleasure of being able to represent the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan. Our organization was founded on NAGPRA, and it's one we take very seriously. We try to do the best on behalf of the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan, but also the Michigan Anishinaabe Cultural Preservation and Repatriation Alliance, who have the pleasure of being the chairman of for the last 7 years. So we have a lot of trust in us by our Saginaw Chippewa Tribal Council, our Saginaw Chippewa Tribal Administration, our members of the Zibowing Center, and our tribal community, and the Great Lakes Anishinaabe. So we have a lot of responsibility, and we just thoroughly enjoy doing the work on behalf of everyone.
And Willie, the coalition that you mentioned is something that's pretty special. And from what I'm also hearing from the folks with the NAGPRA program, it's one way of taking a look at this law and figuring out how can we make it work for us. A lot of times in some of these cases, there are tribes who are having connections to different ancestors, and a lot of times that creates friction. Where are you at? Tribes have gone together or bounded together to make sure that no matter what, the ancestors are coming home. Is there anything more you want to say about that?
Yeah, we're lucky. We're fortunate because we have such wonderful people that we work with. We work with the Bay Mills Indian community, the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians. We work with the Hanaville Potawatomi Indian community. We work with the Keweenaw Bay Indian community. We work with the Lackview Desert Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians. We work with the Little River Band of Ottawa Indians. We work with the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians. We work with the Machi Benishwish Band of Potawatomi Indians, the Gun Lake Tribe. We work with the Nottawaseppi Huron Band of the Potawatomi. We work with the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan, of course. And then we also work with the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians. And we work collaboratively and cooperatively with the Pokagon Band of Potawatomi Indians. And so it's a big consortium of tribes that, you know, everyone brings their expertise to the table and does their best. And fortunately for us, we don't have too much to worry about in regard to repatriating ancestral human remains and associated funerary objects, because everybody kind of gets it. The work is equally as important to these individual tribes as it is to the Saginaw Chippewa.
So the priority is to bring the ancestors home. And Willie, you shared with me those who were excavated didn't have a chance to say yes or no to being dug up or their cultural items. Why is it important to bring this into the conversation? Go ahead.
Yeah, we often talk about basic human dignity, and that the fact that NAGPRA brings basic human dignity to the Saginaw Chippewa and our fellow MACPRA tribes. It is important to realize that these individuals, you know, were living, breathing people at one time, and you know, just because that they may have been a part of the distant past doesn't mean that they're not related to us. And so the repatriation of these individuals is of our highest priority. And one of the things that, you know, we haven't really discussed too much is that every repatriation and reburial ceremony provides spiritual well-being for our tribes. And, of course, it provides a future for our children. So we look at these individuals as those that have provided a path for us to follow. And we're always going to be amazingly respectful and do everything that we can to ensure that they're returned back to Mother Earth.
And Willie, you shared with me that you're doing a lot of this work, too, so that future generations won't have to do this. With that, Willie, I'm also wondering your thoughts when you think about what more NAGPRA has ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's I think the one of the biggest difficulties that we face in doing our work under NAGPRA is in regard to more education and training for museum representatives and then also for tribes. So fortunately for us that have been around for, you know, 20 or so years, that comes rather easy to us. But we always encourage educational opportunities on behalf of NAGPRA. And fortunately for us, you know, we're voracious readers. So we read the NAGPRA law. We attempt to understand the statute and the regulations. We take advantage of training opportunities. Like myself, I've been to basic NAGPRA training and grants training. We also refer to the National NAGPRA Program's website, which has wonderful video series. And we've even participated in that with a webinar where the University of Michigan's Museum of Anthropological Archaeology and the Saginaw Chippewa and the MACPRA tribe have done a webinar. And then, you know, any intense questions that we may have, you know, we always ask, you know, personally, National NAGPRA Program staff. And then we always go to the website for more information. So if anything, I think that really honestly faces, you know, NAGPRA in a most profound way is a basic understanding of the law. So more training is needed on behalf of museum representatives and also tribal representatives as well.
And Willie, the Zibwig Center has also participated in a project producing a comic book that breaks things down. And it was even featured at the Indigenous Comic-Con where we were last week. And this is a tool to educate. There's a pretty interesting dialogue that goes on in it. And it seems like it's almost explaining from the tribal perspective what the people face, why it's important for Native Nations' voice to be heard. And I learned a lot from it. Is there anything you want to share and maybe contacts if people want to find out more?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're pretty proud of the comic book, for one. It's called Journeys to Complete the Work. stories about repatriations and changing the way we bring Native American ancestors home. We always have to give credit where credit is due. We never like to not anyone's contribution. Dr. Sonia Adelaide from the University of Massachusetts and in Amherst wrote the book along with Jen Shannon from the University of Colorado in Boulder, and then John G. Swagger, who is an archaeologist and cartoonist, helped us with the actual comic book itself. We're most proud of this comic book, and yeah, it would be kind of neat for folks to kind of contact the Zebrawing Center or Dr. Adelaide at the University of Massachusetts and Amherst for copies. And one of our proudest moments, of course, is that the actual cover features a repatriation that we did here at the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan's tribal reservation, and it has American Indian Movement founder Dennis Banks on the cover. Dennis was actually here during a recommitment to the earth ceremony, and he's on the cover of that. And you know, we're most thankful for all the American Indian Movement's awareness of NAGPRA at the time of, you know, the NAGPRA law was being written. So we have many, many people to thank from the American Indian Movement, most notably Clyde Bellacourt and Dennis Banks, and then also Eddie Benton Binet and others. So yeah, we're very proud of the comic book, and I'm sure it's going to be sold. We're all nice comic books are sold, but if folks need a copy, please contact the Zebrawing Center or Dr. Adelaide at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst.
All right. I also got to say, I enjoyed seeing the cartoon version of Bambi Krause. Y'all did a great job on that. And folks, that's going to do it for our hour. I do appreciate you for tuning in. Also, thanks to our guests, Shannon Keller O'Loughlin, Melanie O'Brien, and William Willie Johnson. We hope you can join us again tomorrow for a discussion on wild horse populations in Native America. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our senior producer is Monica Brain. Andy Murphy is our associate producer. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. Thank you for joining us. Visit us online, NativeAmericaCalling.com. That's also where you will find an archive of today's program. Thanks. Have a great afternoon.
Buju, hoshkia ya ag da bindige bi agazawag danke gwene negenego nige iguan, binish nishtana ashinigo dwaso bibunigiziwad, bakinige binish money to gizisus, medaswe ashinano gonagizid, ganoj 1-800-318-2596 gema wadishuane go.cms.gov/native health, gawundinagadeg the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Miigwech.
Support for this program provided by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs to help you save money and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you. For more information and resources, including member benefits and discounts, AARP advocacy, and more, go to aarp.org.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.